This is a conversation with Mary Armstrong. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
So, Mary, you're a trauma therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've just recently retired, actually, but for 30-plus years, I was a trauma therapist, a focusing-oriented psychotherapist specializing in people dealing with childhood trauma.
And so you have your own experience professionally with people having trauma, and
yes.
You also have your own personal experience.
Right. That makes me, well, probably not so unusual, but it's unusual that I talk about it. And, you know, I had these memories of my own child sexual abuse when I was in my late 40s. And that's actually a pretty typical time for traumatic memories to break through,
mm-hmm.
40s and 50s. I think that's probably when we're capable of handling the material. You know, the children are pretty well on their way by then. We're established in our careers. You know, we're feeling more secure probably than we have in our earlier lives. That memory vault or whatever it is inside us says, okay, you're strong enough now to get this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only later in life, in your adult life, that you actually came to grips with these memories of your own abuse.
That's right. Now, some people never forget. They always remember. But for most people, you know, it's a survival mechanism. Like, how could you live in that family? You have to not know what's going on as a child.
Yeah. And as a focusing-oriented therapist, you feel that focusing is especially adapted to dealing with trauma.
Yes, I can't imagine any better way. Because, you know, a regular focusing practice is like the drip on the rock, as Jenlyn has often said. And we get a little bit. So it allows us to catch up with what's finally going to surface. And we'll never get something that we're not ready for. It's a very gradually we get these glimpses.
Yeah. So the little drip on the rock, in other words, to avoid being flooded, the little drip on the rock allows you to calibrate, to titrate how much you can take at a given moment.
Right. We don't want any flooding.
So could you describe how you use focusing in the course of dealing with trauma with people?
Mm-hmm, right. Well, first of all, people learn to focus. Some people just learn, or sort of natural focusers, and learn in the process of psychotherapy with me. And some people I refer to focusing trainers to actually learn focusing. But I'm always bringing people back to their bodies. And how does that feel in your body? Is there something happening in there? And, you know, if somebody raises an eyebrow and says, oh, what? Well, you know, you say maybe you'd like to take some classes in focusing. And but usually people really get it, that my role as a focusing-oriented psychotherapist is to make a safe place for people to do their inner work. And so, you know, I don't let people just go on talking from the neck up. We're always bringing it back to the body. And the body, of course, in its wisdom, knows what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, that's our guidance and that's our path, is what the body's saying.
So two things that I'm hearing from you. One is to not let people talk from the neck up, to always bring it to the body.
Yes.
And also that if people don't really naturally respond to that kind of prompting, mm-hmm. that you encourage them to take actually specific focusing training as opposed to, say, doing some of the training as part of the therapy.
Yes. Well, often people do learn to focus in therapy, but that's because they're predisposed to learn mm-hmm. when they come. Actually, most of the people I work with learn to focus. Sometimes they don't even know what it's called, but we just do this thing, and they're so moved by finding out that there is something interesting in that body, you know, that there is another person in there who has all this wisdom and knows how to move us forward at just the right pace. If we don't push it, we just make, again, a safe place for people to do their inner work.
Yeah, so that sense of the safety, the gentleness, that that contact with the inner world that draws people in.
That's right. That's right. Yes. So once they discover that, we're really off to healing. So they learn that they have the wisdom within them. And their bodies, their organisms know how fast we should go. And we follow that as our guidance. And that guides the healing. And, of course, we respect the basic principles of focusing. The focusing attitude is something I teach in therapy. And to be kind and welcoming of anything that comes up. We're respectful of the inner child because it's the child that the trauma has happened to. And anything that child says is okay. We need to get on a friendly relationship with it. And the resistance we look at as protection. At one time you needed that. So we treat resistance with great respect. We don't mm-hmm. take a battering ram to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We go around it and talk to it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so respect is the healing antidote to abuse.
Oh, that's lovely. Respect is the healing antidote to abuse, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So would it be okay to maybe talk about your own experience as a person, in a way, discovering that, you know, trauma is not just something you deal with professionally, but your own gradual awakening to the sense of it happened to you.
Right, right. Yes. A lot of that happened at the Focusing Institute's workshops with Mary McGuire, who was the director at one time. And there was a particularly moving time with Mary when I closed my eyes to focus. It was my turn to focus with Mary, and I talk about this in my book. She didn't say anything. She didn't start to clear space or come in there as my guide. And so I just went deep inside, very deep. And I discovered a little girl in the mouth of a cave. And that little girl had to stay in the cave in my focusing experience. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, you know, you could come out. It's beautiful out here. You can run anywhere you want. And in my mind's eye, there were hills and valleys and quite a beautiful landscape. And she said, no, don't you understand? I can't come out. Mm. And so what was this all about? And this was part of the beginning of my awareness that I had some sort of secret in there that I was so afraid to let out, that had to stay in there, this child part felt. So I didn't know where this was going to lead me, but I knew it was leading me in some very compelling direction that I had to pay attention to and do my regular focusing practice with.
Yeah, so that awareness of the little girl who wants to stay in hiding in the cave, so you know there is a secret, and
there,
you don't know the secret.
Yeah, I don't know what on earth this is all about.
Yeah.
But I knew enough at that point to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
This is important.
So, and you brought it to your regular focusing practice.
Yes, right. And then I had, you know, dreams and focusing go hand in hand. The focusing is the drip on the rock, and a dream can take us a quantum leap forward in our process. But dreams are safe too, because if we're not ready for it, we don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of focusing on the dream and working with it and holding it, we come to a place where, you know, we are ready for it. Yes. And so that there again, it's safe. So I had this dream that absolutely bewildered me. In the dream, I'm walking in this beautiful forest. And I said, there's something wrong here. And I realized that huge snakes are entwining all the trees. And, oh, snakes don't belong here in this beautiful scene of innocence. And so that was my dream. So what on earth did that mean? And so, you know, working with the dream, thinking about it, focusing on it, you know, brought me again, gradually, there's no hurry here, until I realized, and now I want to get back to what you were saying, here I am, a trauma therapist, and I reacted the way my clients react. Oh, that didn't happen in my family. You know, I didn't want to be a trauma victim. You know, I wanted to be the girl from the nice family whose father adored her, and you know, everything looked so good. And of course, we trauma survivors were very good at looking good.
So that moment of it cannot have happened to me. It's not.
Oh no. Yes, and then I, being a trauma therapist, I thought, oh, it must be. I must be confusing the dreams and the experiences of my clients with my own. I must be making this up. And then as it became clearer and clearer what had happened, I thought, boy, I better be pretty careful here, you know, who I'm accusing, not in the court of law, but in my own mind.
So, you know, there's something very beautiful as you're describing this about the process. And I'm hearing your dream of this beautiful forest and then the serpents, the snakes around the trees, and that sense of it doesn't belong there. But at the same time, you know, the meaning is still hidden because there is that need for protection. And that your own conscious process is about, you know, this cannot have happened. It's interesting, but it's not me. And, you know, and I can see how the process of focusing, of slowly, you know, disentangling, slowly letting things come out, really works beautifully to respect that need for protection.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. We just get little pieces as we are ready for them. Isn't that incredible? And then I had, now this is in my late 40s, and it was Christmas time, and my husband and I had decided to stay home at Christmas. Our son was traveling. He was the other side of the world. And we just decided, we were both very, very tired from our work with child sexual abuse, because we both work in the same area, and it was a brand new field. This was back in the 80s. And so we decided to stay home and sleep in and journal, focus, journal. And that was when my memories finally came up in a way that I couldn't deny them. So again, it's when we're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And it was becoming so clear to me now that this had actually happened. But then again, there's also the push and the pull, because I think in all of us, in all of my clients and in myself, there's the part of us that's pushing to get through this because, you know, we want to know our own history. We want to be authentic. We want to heal from the wounds of child abuse. And then there's another part that pulls us back, and that's a very old part, because from the time we've been children, we've had a terrible secret that we had to hide. And I use Jean Genlin's words here. When you have a secret that is so terrible that leaking it would detonate your world, you keep it a secret even from yourself. And so this was what was breaking forth in my life, this huge secret. So there's the push and the pull in all of us.
Yeah. So very aware that what's happening is not just in one direction. There's both a push and a pull.
Absolutely. Yes, and that's, I think that's why focusing with its emphasis on drip on the rock, gradually, is very, very helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because both, you respect both the push and the pull, and they have a reason for being.
Yeah, you understand it. So we're more understanding with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Takes away, oh, for heaven's sakes, why can't I just get through this? Well, I can't.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you talk, I'm also noticing there's a very gentle tone in which you talk about this. And of course,
yes,
it's been a while and you have digested it. Mm-hmm. But there is also that gentleness of the quality of your tone about it that has a very a soothing effect, a sense of some kind of a larger container, a sense that there's life outside of this.
Yes.
You know, but there's I am very aware of something happening as I listen to the tone and rhythm of your voice.
Right. Well, it's important that we're in a friendly relationship with all parts of our personality. And, you know, the dark side we have to learn to love. And, you know, if you've grown up as a survivor of child sexual abuse, there are things that you've done, well, things I've done, that are really embarrassing, or it's very ashamed of. And those things, too, we need to put a gentle arm around and say, oh, yes, you know, that was the wounding. And, you know, that happened because of what had happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So always being gentle, always being in a friendly relationship.
Yeah, in a friendly relationship, even to those things that would actually generate this intense feeling of shame.
That's right. Yes. Yes, I talk about some of those in my book. And I talk about them because I thought it was important. If I'm going to tell my story, I have to be really upfront. I have to tell it all, even the parts that are quite embarrassing, because other people I know have experienced those. And I want them to know from my experience that, yeah, you know, we did things that we thought after, well, what on earth was going on there? But we did them because of the wounding. So it was important to come clean.
Yeah, coming clean, and also I hear that sense of wanting very much to support others.
That's right. That's why I wrote my book. I didn't write my book, you know, until I was in my 70s,
mm-hmm.
And for good reason. I think, you know, by then, well, when you're 70, who cares what people think? It's not so important anymore. You know, you're not trying to establish yourself in a career, or you're not, well, it's just not of consequence anymore. We get past that as we get old.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it was really important. And actually, I had some really good focusing sessions with Mary Jenlin around this. And at that point, I was tormented, is maybe too strong a word, but I had this story I was working on. And by the way, I started writing my book just for myself,
mm-hmm.
to get my story straight in my mind and to understand it better. And then it was turning into something that I thought, this would be so useful to people like my clients to see somebody else going through it who has the awareness of a trauma therapist. And but on the other hand, there was my family, and my family are wonderful dissociators. They all grew up in quite a different family from the one I did, and they don't want to hear things like this. So did I have a right to publish my book and maybe hurt them? On the other hand, another part of me said, you publish your book and it gives them an opportunity to do their work if they're ready for it. So with Mary Jenlin, I came to the conclusion in my focusing with her, yes, for the greater good, I need to publish my book.
Yeah,
so that's how.
So even that, again, is not a simple process. Even though you ended up concluding it was for the greater good, there's again that push and pull, because there's different sides and not a simple answer in any way.
Exactly, the push and the pull again. Nothing is simple. Right, yes. Yeah. So I'm very glad I published it, because I, you know, hear every day from people who have been helped by it, and who say, oh my goodness, I'm so glad you said that. Thank you. It meant so much to me.
Yeah. So that sense of giving a voice to that experience in a way that you as a child couldn't experience it, and in a way that people you know, who are not, you know, don't have in a way that experience of focusing and training as a trauma therapist could really make sense of it.
Yes, yes, right. Yes, and describing how my memories came in little pieces, and my bewilderment and my resistance, not just protection, all of those things I think are very helpful for other people who are struggling to read, and that I came through it. You know, I have a really good life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a happy woman.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing you said, you know, my memories came in little pieces. So
yeah.
Just you know, these little broken memories, association. These and it's like almost I hear people who are doing archaeological digs and getting little shards of pottery or little pieces of bone and patiently putting them together. Right. To reconstitute a lost civilization, or
yes, that's right.
Yeah,
and just to use a geological expression, when you get your memories, the platelets of the earth shift, because for the first time your life makes sense. Oh, that's why I had so much trouble with that. You know, for instance, adult sexuality with a loving partner. I think. Really all, as far as I know, victims of child sexual abuse have great difficulty not being fearful or angry in a sexual situation that has nothing to do with their terrible childhood experiences. But the brain, a primitive part of the brain, remembers it. It makes it very difficult to be in a loving adult relationship.
Yeah, yeah. So that sense of now finally making sense of these really puzzling facts.
Yes. Yeah. It has that soft, oh, no wonder. Oh, poor sweetie. Rather than, what's the matter with me?
Yeah. So that whole, you know, it's I hear in your tone, like that totally different relationship you can have with yourself as you understand what happened.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it. Totally different relationship with yourself. Yes. Compassion. The focusing attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, as we talk about this, I know that, you know, normally we have a conversation, not just a reading part, but is there any part of the book you might want to share with people?
Yeah, I so many parts, but I think I'd like to read about my first meeting with Jean.
Okay.
Because that was life-changing, and we get why focusing is so important in his words. So it's a page and a half. Does that sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jean's there in the circle, and you see, he said, crossing his legs, leaning forward intently to look around the circle to make sure we understood. You are separate from your problems and issues. Excuse me. You are also separate from your emotions. You need to find the right distance from your problems so you can have a relationship with them. You can't do that if you're too close to your problems or too distant. Most people do one or the other. Either they can't find any space for themselves free of their problems, or they put so much distance between themselves and what bothers them, there's no way they can be effective in resolving their issues. We need to find the right distance. We do that by clearing space, the first step in focusing. Oh, the thought of feeling really good was revolutionary to me. I had always felt it wasn't okay to feel good. I needed to feel serious and reliable. A good person carries a burden of responsibility, I told myself. I explored my discomfort a little more and discovered a belief that if I felt wonderful, something bad was bound to happen. Now, that's every survivor's trauma thinking.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there was a sense of relief that my problems were finite. I could always come to the end of the list and experience that, except for a few problems, everything was fine. The hovering sense of a heavy burden weighing down on me 24 hours a day lifted. I could set down my burden and take a break from it. The whole weekend was filled with life-changing challenges. Inside me, there was a person who was different from the part of me that handled the external world, making my way through traffic or balancing my checkbook. While the outer self was the tip of the iceberg, the inner self was 9/10 underwater. To access that deeper self, I needed to be with it in a very caring, patient way. Otherwise, it would not dare to tell me what I needed to know, and I would continue to have access to only a fraction of my wisdom. It knew what needed my attention. It knew how to move towards healing. I didn't. This meant allowing the body to lead the way while keeping my head out of it. All this was summed up in Jenlin's definition of the focusing attitude. I love this statement. Every bad feeling has in it the potential for a more right way of being if we give it space to move towards its rightness. I needed to value the uncomfortable feelings. Instead of trying to get rid of them, I was to view them with curiosity. The queasy feeling in my stomach or the tight feeling in my chest was trying to tell me something. If I could learn to focus on those bodily felt signals, I could tap into my unconscious knowing. I would know how I really felt about something or why some seemingly trivial incident upset me. Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad I met that man and focusing.
And it's beautiful to have actually that part that you read to understand how it happened, how that was a turning point where you got the sense that it was okay, it was possible, and it was good to make space for those difficult things.
Right.
So progressively, you know, you had more and more space to make sense of them.
That's right. Yes, more and more space. Yeah, I could set them down. I could feel more whole. Yes, and have this, being in a cleared space, as I just read, was so totally new to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thanks, Mary. That was very beautiful sharing this with us.
Thank you for doing this.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.